Today's Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Gowan Canada, the go-to company. Gowan's herbicide portfolio includes Avidex and Fortress, which control Group 1 and Group 2 resistant wild oats. Don't let wild oats rob your yields. Use Avidex and Fortress to stop them in their tracks. Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, we hear from the Manitoba Cooperators' Alan Dawson, who has news about the possibility of commodity group mergers in that province.
Well, some of the smaller commodity groups or members of them might worry about the impact of their commodity. So if they're small, they might get lost in the shuffle, may not get the resources that they feel they need to promote their crop.
John Gregg of Country Guide fills us in on what he's learned at the recent Innovative Farmers of Ontario meeting in London.
Flaxseed oil has something he calls orbitize, which is a unique peptide, which does things that other peptides don't do, and it can result in healthier food, and it can even be used as building blocks to other construction type materials.
And Phil Franz Workington of Commodity News Service Canada brings us his take on the markets.
Soybean prices come under pressure, and whenever soybean prices are under pressure, Canadian oilseeds, canola, are under pressure as well.
All this on Between the Rows with this week's host, Gord Gilmore.
Hi, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. One of the big events every winter in the Manitoba agriculture calendar is Crop Connect. This annual gathering pulls together a number of the commodity groups into a single event in a single location. They share the resources and expenses and all conduct their own separate business meetings around a schedule of speakers. In many ways, it's a handy metaphor for a discussion that's gaining strength in the Keystone Province. Commodity groups here are talking in earnest about the possibility of cooperation and collaboration. Quietly, some are even talking about merger. We're joined today in the studio by Manitoba Cooperator reporter Alan Dawson. Hi, Alan. How are you today?
I'm well. How about you?
Doing well, thank you. Alan, what can you tell us about how this discussion about cooperation, collaboration, and possible mergers started?
Started back in April 2015 with the Manitoba Wheat and Barley Growers Association. It got some funding from the provincial government through the Growing Forward program, and wanted to do some research on where they could cooperate with existing commodity groups. Being a new group itself, it wanted to find ways to save money.
So what are some of the reasons people are putting forward to wanting to move in this direction?
Well, you know, that going back 2 years, this discussion about collaboration has been going on, and the Wheat and Barley Growers Association has done some of that. It recently hired a joint general manager with the Manitoba Corn Growers Association. And so the drive there, of course, was to find ways to save money, to economize. And then since then, they're thinking about, well, what more can we do? And some commodity groups are saying, yeah, there's more things we can share, more ways we can make ourselves more efficient. But others, like the corn growers, have said, you know, we've been cooperating quite a few years now, and maybe we should consider going to the next step, which would be merging. And they've said they've reached this point, and now it's time to discuss those kind of things with the membership.
So would this be similar than what they're proposing to something like the Grain Farmers of Ontario that we saw a few years ago that emerged from some of these groups?
You know, that's one of the models that's been referred to. And so several people have alluded to that, to the Ontario growers getting together and forming one organization. So that's definitely one of the models that could come forward.
So anytime there's a change, there's benefits, obviously, that people are chasing, but there's also the potential for pitfalls. So can you tell us a little about what those things are that people are worried about as they move forward?
Well, some of the smaller commodity groups or members of them might worry about the impact of their commodity. So if they're small, they might get lost in the shuffle, may not get the resources that they feel they need to promote their crop. But on the other hand, the small commodity groups are lacking in money, and so a big chunk of their funds has to go to overhead. And the thinking on the pro side is that with lower overhead costs and more money could go to crop variety development or market development. Mm-hmm.
Now, what about the sense of urgency surrounding this? Is there a sense of urgency? Are we at the talking stage, or are people going ahead and actually making steps on this? Where do you feel that sort of lands up?
I think it's more at the talking stage in sense of at Crop Connect, Kelly Dobson, a farmer from Fairfax, Manitoba, who was on the Sunflower Association when some of these talks first began and is also a consultant, has taken on the job of trying to collect feedback from farmers to see where they want to go. And I should point out, too, when you asked about where the genesis of this came from, and of course the wheat and barley growers were involved in this study, but even before that, going back to 2013, many might remember the name Danny Penner, a farmer from Hobstad out near Altona, Manitoba, had put forward a letter saying, you know, we've got a lot of commodities groups here. We've got a lot of overlap. There's a lot of cost. All this money is coming from the same farmer that in many cases are growing the same crops. So he was advocating not only collaboration and even merger at the provincial level, but maybe even interprovincially.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think the next steps are going to be then?
I think more discussion. I think the commodity groups might want to get the feedback from the membership. That might even prompt a survey to get a better handle on what people are thinking. The message at Crop Connect was that none of the directors on these boards want to push an agenda. They genuinely, even if they have feelings themselves about further cooperation or even mergers, they don't want to move on, especially on the merger side, without a clear indication from the membership that that's the direction they want to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Thanks for joining us, Alan.
Thank you.
Alan Dawson writes for the Manitoba Cooperator. You can read more about this story online or in the Manitoba Cooperator. This is Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. Coming up a little later in the program, Phil Franz Workington will be by with a look at markets this week. But right now, John Gregg, Glacier Farm Media Ontario's field editor. He's at the Innovative Farmers of Ontario meeting today in London, Ontario. He joins us now to tell us all about it. Hi, John. Tell us a little bit about the meeting you're at.
Hi, Gord. Sure. I'm here in London at the Innovative Farmers Association of Ontario. It's an organization that's been around for a number of years that really focuses on bringing together farmers who believe that they have a role in sharing information about what they do on their farms, especially related to soil and soil conservation. So even though the name is innovative, a lot of the focus is really on crops and soil conservation for this organization.
That sounds interesting, and it's actually kind of a nice segue, conservation and making more of what we have. I understand you've been looking at an Ontario project that's been encouraging the development of bioproducts, and now those are industrial products that include raw materials produced by agriculture. So, for example, something like a molded panel with plant fibers, or a glue or a resin made from plant materials. So what can you tell us about this cluster and how it was started?
So Bioindustrial Innovation Canada is the organization. It was created about 8 years ago in Sarnia, Ontario. Now a lot of people kind of scratch their head about why this was created by government, the petrochemical industry, and the agriculture industry coming together at Sarnia, which is a small city on the Great Lakes. And it's not really the agriculture heartland, although it's surrounded by agriculture production, but it was put there because of it's really the heartland of Ontario's petrochemical sector. And the goal is to replace some of those petrochemicals with bioproducts on a large scale in some cases, and then on a smaller, very precise scale in others. So it was created with funding from government, et cetera, to bring together networks of people involved in bioproducts, agricultural production, and petrochemicals. So they have been there for 8 years. A lot of their funding to the agriculture community and agriculture innovation flows through something called the Bioproducts AgSci Cluster, which is under their umbrella and is really kind of the flow-through organization, mostly funded by Growing Forward to federal-provincial government's agreement.
So can we dive down a little bit into it then and tell us what specifically kind of products are they looking at here?
So they'll tell you they're interested in anything that takes a takes a bioproduct, usually biomass of some sort, especially things that are not fully utilized in the agriculture production process, that they can add value to. So that's resulted in projects as varied as a couple of ethanol plants in Ontario, one based at Sarnia, and then they are now more fully getting into other projects that are you could call them second generation bioproducts. There is a lot of work going into a what they call a cellulosic sugars mill, which will come from corn and wheat stover to be built, so they hope, next year in the Sarnia area. And the name of that plant will be, and the company that's building the plant is Comet Biorefinery, and they, a bit different than a lot of ethanol plants or plants that have created sugars from corn products. They plan that most of their production will go towards chemicals, so replacing petrochemicals in industrial processes. So not to fuel necessarily, but to replacing petrochemicals in industrial processes. And then they're also involved in some very precise upgrading of products from agriculture production. So, for example, there's a company called EcoSynthetics in Burlington, Ontario, and they are taking saccharides from corn, and they are, what they say, are upgrading them through their chemical process, and those what they come out with ends up as binders, what they call broadly binders, and those can be used in anything, and especially in to replace things like formaldehyde in composite wood products. So if you think of the composite wood products around us, they're everywhere. And they are pretty excited about the opportunities they have to replace that formaldehyde using a corn-based binder in those products. So those are a few examples of the projects they're involved in.
So for the companies that are involved, then, is their concern primarily on the sort of environmental side? Are they trying to sort of reduce their overall environmental footprint? Is that their interest here?
So it's interesting. There's a couple of different streams where it comes in. Some of them are, so from what we understand, and I was at their annual meeting recently and had some very interesting discussions with some of these companies there. The direction and the pull is coming from the consumer, and then even more than the consumer necessarily, the companies that are selling products to the consumers that want just to be rid of things that they perceive as harmful or concerning environmentally, such as the formaldehyde in composite wood products. So companies like IKEA that might sell a baby crib would really love to have a composite wood product crib that can say, well, this contains no formaldehyde. So that's where some of it is driven from. But the actual companies that are creating these are often driven from science. So the scientists that have created something in their research, and then they have worked to commercialize it. So, for example, there's a company called Prairie Tide Chemicals, which is taking flax seed, and the president of the company there figured out that flax seed oil has something he calls orbitides, which is a unique peptide, which does things that other peptides don't do, and that he believes can result in healthier food, and it can even be used as building blocks to other construction type materials. So the motivation is, back to your original question, is environmental, but some of it is happening because of research direction and things that we are figuring out about bioproducts and agriculture source products.
So turning to the farmer side, which is always the side of the equation we're interested in, mm-hmm. What does this mean to the average farmer in Ontario and Western Canada? Are we looking at new markets, better markets? What can you tell us about that?
So as happens with a lot of these high-level clusters and first stage funding organizations, is you don't always really know what the end will be to the marketplace. Now, the bigger projects like the ethanol plants, those have had a very demonstrable impact on, say, the corn basis in Ontario, and have been very important to to that. Some of the other projects, like the Comet Biorefining Project, is very interesting. The Comet Biorefining has partnered with a new farmer cooperative, and that farmer cooperative is currently signing up members in within about 100-kilometer radius of Sarnia to supply that corn stover. So the Comet Biorefining will buy the corn stover from the cooperative, so they don't have to worry about individual farmers, but the cooperative will also, as a farmer buys a share of the cooperative, they will buy they are going to own a stake in that plant. So it's not a huge amount of money that's going to come back to the farmer from having the corn stover harvested and then fed into that plant, but they do anticipate, their projections are it could be the equivalent of about 50 cents a bushel, which is not a bad little premium for a farmer on corn. So, and then if you look at some of the other downstream chemical applications, that isn't necessarily going to have as big a market impact, because they're basically taking, they can upgrade a small amount of material into a large amount of impact. So that won't have as much of an impact on the larger market, but certainly provides a good news story for agriculture and for farmers on the environmental side.
That sounds very interesting. It sounds like something we should be watching for the next while. Thanks for your time, John.
Yes, thank you. Take care.
John Gregg is Glacier Farm Media's Ontario field editor. We spoke to him today from the Innovative Farmers of Ontario meeting in London. Up next is Phil France Workington, who joins us from Commodity News Service Canada in Winnipeg.
Hi, Gord.
Hi, Phil. It seems like oilseed markets around the globe are a bit uncertain right now. Can you help us make a bit more sense of it all? In particular, I'm wondering what trends you've got your eye on right now.
Well, right now, the trends are large supplies of vegetable oil. That's weighing on kind of prices across the board. Canola is a smaller player in the big picture, but palm oil has been trending down, as is soy oil, and that has got the Canadian canola oil pointed a bit lower as well.
So back in Western Canada, though, we've seen a lot of talk about a fairly healthy crush margin. So what impact is that having? It seems to me it's muting it a little bit, but I admit this is not necessarily my area of expertise, so I'm very curious to hear what you have to say about that.
Well, the crush margin at its most basic is the profitability of crushing canola. So you pay X dollars for the seed, and the margin is what you get back in profit when you turn that seed into oil and meal. So right now the crush margin is about $86 above the nearby futures. So for every ton of canola, that's $86 back in the crusher's pocket. Give or take, those are just kind of the basic numbers. They've got their own contracts underway and they're making something different. But so $86, looking back historically, that's pretty good. But a month ago, it was $126, so that's $40 less than it was a month ago. So the crush margins have come off of where they were, and that's possibly taking some demand out of the market, or at least making the demand less aggressive as it might have been.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some reports now, going back globally, that the South American soybean harvest in particular seems to be well underway, and in fact, a fair bit ahead of schedule. What effect is that having on the oilseed markets?
Yeah, the Brazil is, last I saw, they're about a quarter done on their harvest, and Argentina's a little, I don't think they've quite started yet, but they will be soon, and they're going to grow big soybean crops. Over 100 million tons in Brazil and over 50 million in Argentina. So those soybeans will be displacing U.S. soybeans in the global market sooner rather than later. And that means soybean prices come under pressure. And whenever soybean prices are under pressure, Canadian oil seeds, canola, are under pressure as well.
What about the moving away from the fundamental side of the market? I understand that canola appears to be facing an uphill climb on the chart and the technical side. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so if you look at the chart on canola, the nearby nearby canola is trading today at around $520 maybe, but you look at a chart, the weekly chart, going back to 2013, 530, 540, that is about as high as it goes, and so we're right near the top of that range right now, and there's little, with the fundamentals not giving any sign to climb higher, there's little real reason for prices to move above that mark from a technical standpoint either. So what goes up must come down. So on the kind of pattern, wave pattern of the futures, we're near the top and possibly due to go down or at least not go any higher.
So summing it up then, it sounds like you're not seeing a lot of bright spots for canola in the next while.
Not too many really, but there's always the chance of keep an eye on South American weather, because that is a quarter of Brazil's crop may be off, but that may leave 75% that still has the chance of a weather scare to give a boost here or there. And closer to home, the jury's still out on how much canola is actually around in Western Canada, and despite what we said about crush margins kind of coming off their highs, the crush pace is still at a record level, and exports are running fairly smoothly. And so the idea is supplies will probably be tighter this year at the end of the crop year than they have been in the past couple of years. So that could be something to keep an eye on in the next few months if supplies tighten up.
Great. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us, Phil.
You are welcome.
Well, that's another edition of Between the Rows. I'm your host, Gord Gilmore. Glad you could take the time to listen. We'll be back next week with another great lineup of ag issues.
We'd like to thank Gowan Canada, our sponsor for today's Between the Rows podcast. Remember, if you have Group 1 or 2 resistant wild oats on your farm, use Avidex or Fortress to control them. Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. If you like what you heard on today's show and you want to hear more, go to membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.